And we're back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man Podcast, episode 407 with Drunken Emerald Arrow, aka Galaxy Express Media. What's going on, man? How are you doing?
Not too bad. Doing well. Kicking back and relaxing, still spending some time recovering from the Las Vegas FNT meetup.
Yeah, man, it was a crazy week, so to speak. I ended up leaving, you know, early Thursday. We left at like 2 o'clock, got back here by five. It was a 2.5 hour trip back, but, you know, it's a lot easier than other people who had to obviously drive out and fly out, you know, but
16 hours straight drive.
Really?
Yeah. And fucking I left early Thursday morning though. Next year I'm planning to make it almost an entire week long event and actually stay. And nice thing is I got some friends, that I work with that have offered their place in Vegas the next time I go. So I might not have to pay for a room.
Yeah, because those Vegas rooms are actually just so expensive. Not going to lie. Just for like a night, I think it's like, what, $100 or something? Or like $150, depending on which hotel you're at. That's why you have people trying to, you know, go in room at Circus. It's cheap as hell, you know? Just gets the job done, you know?
Well, even the Stratosphere ended up being about $89 a night.
Fucking hell.
And but the location's good. It's only an hour. It's only a mile north of the Millennium Fan Bar. So location to it, at least, is close. But it's pretty far north up on the Strip.
Good Lord. And let's start here, since this is your first one-on-one show. How was your life growing up, actually?
A pretty normal band geek growing up, really into music and stuff like that. Got into video editing and stuff like that. I did a local cooking show for public access, just doing the directing and producing of the show and editing. And then joined the Navy, did 5 years in the Navy in the submarine fleet. Sonar tech, and then got out and stayed in the area, and now I'm in manufacturing, working, doing the planning, and pretty high level that I've moved up in my time with the company, so working right below almost the vice president.
That's good. That's great. And you know, you have a lot of people that, you know, are going to college after high school and they get all this debt in university and stuff like that. You didn't go to college or university, did you? And you're just fine.
Well, I started off going to college and dropped out after the second semester. The biggest reason was that you have to take all of these stupid classes that don't relate to it. And then on top of that, I was going through a program I shouldn't have gone into. I should have gone into media. Video editing and stuff like that, stuff I was good at. And I ended up going into music business. And it was about 10% was music, 90% business. Not ideal. But what really put me over the edge on going, you know, this is just not for me, was the fact that I walked into a humanities course. And on the very first day, the professor looks to all the students and goes, "None of you know what cool is. I will teach you what is cool." And I'm like, that's subjective. Cool is subjective and it's different for each person. You don't teach cool. Cool is individualist. So yeah, at that point I was like, nope, I got to get out of this. I'm in the wrong place.
That was the turning point. You were just fuck this.
Oh yeah. That was the turning point. Well, that and the music business aspect of it. I'm going in for the music because, well, I love music. And in the end, it was just too much business, not enough of the music side of it. So
this is something that I've talked to with a lot of people that like music as well, is the music industry. Like, just compared to how we thought it was ran versus like what was actually revealed about it, it's so fucked, honestly, you know?
That's what's great about what's really been happening within the after the 2000s, really, when we when media really took off, when alternative media's really started taking off, from people being able to post their own music and get discovered, and on top of that, not having to go through the music industry to get their own music out there, it changed the entire. I mean, it changed the industry. Though I really bet wrong. I was thinking, you know what, we were on an upscale when I was going to college of rock and roll. And everyone's like, oh no, it's going R&B. It's going rap. And I'm like, no. And it, well, R&B, rap, and pop is just taken off, where rock overall has declined as for a lot of people listening to it.
Which is crazy, because why do you think that happened? Do you think it's because the artists just, the songs just weren't as good? You think the overall way of consuming music just got a lot more easier, so then people have to work for it?
I think it's consumption, because it, really, when you look at a lot of the pop, a lot of popular music now, it almost all sounds like the same song. There isn't much difference between them, where, and it's a lot more using of digital systems. So unlike rock and roll, which is a lot more tactile, guitars, drums, and using actual real instruments. Now, kind of starting to see a resurgence a little bit with real instruments actually being used again, but for a long time. And then what really killed it is just the auto tuning. There's no, I don't think a lot of the new talent that's out there, unless they're independents that are doing it themselves and actually have great singing voices and can perform, a lot of these that are coming out of the music industry in itself, it's auto tune. I mean, it's, you can't, you go and see them live, and they sound nothing like what they're producing in the studios.
I noticed that. Yep. It's just, whew, man, there has been so many issues with the music industry. I mean, the fact that basically, I remember, I think you remember that short that came out with Eminem, where he did that little, that interview he had, and there was that famous short that came out where he basically said, all those award shows don't mean anything because they already picked the winners and everyone's just going there to just kind of stroke each other's egos and shit like that. Like, and then and Snoop Dogg had the interview where he talked about Michael Jackson, the highest selling album was Thriller. And yeah, he said he made a lot of money, but the producers and all that other stuff, it's just such a cutthroat industry, you know?
It is. And well, and that's just, it's the music industry. Well, it's even Hollywood. I mean, their award shows for Hollywood. It's a stroke fest for each other. And I mean, they've decided, it's all decided prior to. I mean, movies that really should be picture of the year aren't getting it because they don't either check a box or, I mean, it, what should be driving movie of the year is which one was the highest producer, which one had the most attendance to the movies. That's your movie of the year, not something that's obscure that no one saw. I mean, look at modern award shows, even though I don't watch them. And most of the time, more than 80% of the movies I've never even heard the title of. Just like, what? So it becomes so niche in exactly niche to what they're looking at. It's like they keep looking at it. And it's, I can't remember what actress, I think it was an actress that said this, that Hollywood movies are going to become more like modern art, where it's really just a select few that are actually going to watch it. But that's because, well, yeah, your industry's in decline when it comes to big Hollywood, because, well, you're making garbage.
And I think music is one of those type of mediums where it was really hard to consume media music when it came to like radio, and you had to get things like cassette players and record players and all that stuff. It came to a point where you could just, I think once like MP3 players and iPods came out, that pretty much kind of killed physical media as far as like CD sales, you know, because you can't even make money off that. You have to just basically make money off of just touring, you know. I mean, unless you're Taylor Swift, I mean, how if you're making a lot of money doing touring, actually, you know? I mean, how many farewell tours has Kith been on now at this point?
Well, one thing that a lot of people don't realize when it comes to the music industry is that overall, with a lot of the contracts for new artists, even the ones that are in their first contract and maybe have like a three album contract, they're what they're bringing home in the end really isn't that much, and where they make their money actually is the touring. So with the MP3s, Napster was specifically like Napster. When Napster came around, it was less about the artist, because I was in the music business school at the time, and we had a lot of up and coming bands coming in. I was part of the music organization that would actually schedule bands to come in, and we hosted the MTV Campus Invasion tour for that year, and we brought them in. And when we brought in the smaller starting off bands, I would always ask a question: what's your opinion of Napster? Because at the time, this is before all the legal stuff started happening, and a lot of them would hand me their CD and say, rip this and get it out there, because Napster for us is how we get our music out there. This is how people actually are going to hear us. And Napster at the time was really just, it was hurting the music industry corporate more than actually the artists themselves, because the artists really, it's their tours and public appearances, it's where they're actually making their money, not so much from CD sales. Oh, you're muted.
Oh, no. It's just one of those things where, can things ever get better in the music industry, actually? Or you think it's just going to be basically, you know, it's basically just one of those businesses where, unless you just do like these specific things, that's how you make your money now? Because like at this point now, you can just be in your house and just make music and potentially just get an audience that way, just putting out your own music on like YouTube, you know, which wasn't an option back then. I still remember when people were putting out their music on like SoundCloud. Remember that? That's fucking old.
At the point. Yeah. Well, SoundCloud's still out there, but
yeah, not
quite used as much. Well, no, I would say what's happening is an evolving of the music industry. And we're seeing it even with Hollywood, and it's the old guard is dying. The old way of doing things is no longer in existence. People aren't turning to mass media. No one's turning really towards that. They're going towards the independent creators. They're going towards people that are making their own stuff and not kowtowing to some kind of corporate overlord. So that's the wave the future is going when it comes to music industry. And then we're seeing it with the movie industry. Now, granted, Daily Wire has their own issues, but Daily Wire creating their own studio and doing a Western with Gina Carano. Then you look at stuff like Epicverse with the guys from Geeks and Gamers. With them doing that, that's breaking away from the corporate and going independent. And it's going to be slow going. I mean, but as long as people support it, as long as people are getting involved in it, it will grow to the point of actually being a good source. And as more people support it, the quality gets better, the storytelling gets better. And so I think the future is really bright when it comes to independent media. Everything from comic books with Ripaverse to independent movies with Epicverse, even Daily Wire on some of their stuff. So I mean, I think we can be optimistic when it comes to the new media.
Yeah, I think that, you know, people have their own issues on Daily Wire, but at least they are putting out movies. Like, they have their own streaming service, they have their own studio, they're at least trying, you know, to put out stuff. And there's other people out there trying to do it, you know, and I think people need to understand it just takes time for that stuff to really just take off. You're going to have to sacrifice, like, even Jeremy Boring put it in one video where he was having that big issue with like Steven Crowder. It just takes a lot of money and a lot of effort and time to get this stuff online for people and to get them to be on board with what you're doing, you know, because for a long time, a lot of people just kind of put it off on other people to just do it for you. You know, and these guys always have always had like massive backing and other things that made things a lot more easier for them. You know, like now you're seeing independent creators come out and do their own thing. And they have been weirdly galvanizing each other too. Like, I don't know if you've seen like the indie comic scene, but there's people there that are just absolutely fucking insane at this point. Like, what are they doing? You know?
Oh, unbelievable what's going on. I mean, you can definitely tell there are some people that are from the comic book industry and have been in there and now are trying to go independent. and then you have someone like Eric July coming in, building a following through music and his YouTube, getting those support there built up, and then creating the Ripaverse. And then actually producing, I mean, not just like small floppies, but actually 100-page books, and getting it out there. And what he's going to have, what we, last year was what, two or three campaigns? No, yeah, two campaigns. And I think he's got two or three coming up this year. And it's because he started it, created the Ripaverse, and then is now bringing in other artists and other writers to expand the universe. So it's not just him alone, and he's built a company, and it's on the, and it is because he did the grind. He did everything to build that following, to get people to be excited about it and knowing his stuff about comics.
Cause you know, I've seen quite a bit of people mention certain things about Eric that are just like so crazy. Actually, if you were to factor in the amount of money he had to invest into to make this work, was just already an incredible amount in and of itself. And like, why would people want it to fail? I just don't understand that. Unless you just legitimately just are a hater, why would you want it to fail? Like, people that put their lives on the line to hope that this works so they can have a profitable business and something that's just another alternative. Because people always say, like, well, why isn't there anything else we can kind of like latch onto and, you know, look forward to? It's always the same stuff. And it's like, you should, as a person, want more things created in that, you know, series, because you get another line of characters to have. You get more stories to be told. You just get more stuff that you already enjoy. And it's like, yeah, sign me up for that. Hell yeah.
I think the biggest thing is jealousy. I overall, looking at everything that's been going on in the independent space right now, is it seems to be the hate that's going on seems to be really overall rooted in jealousy. Someone that's a creator that's created this stuff, someone that maybe came from the industry and is now going independent, and it's just not taking as they thought they would, to see an upstart coming in and being more successful, it's jealousy. So instead, they decide to rip on, attack, and demean and everything, because it's a move of jealousy, where they'll sit there, people will sit there and say, we need to be supporting independence, we need to be backing each other, but then we'll sit there and attack an independent creator because they become successful.
Yeah.
So like I fully believe it's a jealousy thing.
Has to be, yeah, because other indie creators are like, well, why aren't they supporting me this way and stuff like that? And it's like, well, I don't know why. Did you not market very well? Maybe your stuff really just wasn't that good. Maybe instead of blaming everyone else, you start taking responsibility for your own actions and see why didn't this, you know, pop off the way it did, you know? And sometimes it is because there's not enough eyes on it, which can happen, but that's the risk of doing your own independent thing, you know? That's how that happens.
Right, and that's where Eric really did the grind prior to the releasing of Ripaverse, is that he was building the following on YouTube. He was building a fan base. And so you have people that are fans are going to support the creators when they put that stuff out. And then once they get that first book in their hands, read it and start to enjoy it, they're going to continue to look at the story, and as offshoot characters start getting their own comics, they're gonna buy those comics. Because let's say maybe not everyone went with Yara, but they did get Alpha Corps because they liked the story and liked the characters of Alpha Corps. So they're gonna follow, because some are gonna follow everything of Ripaverse. Some are going to latch on to specific characters and follow the books and the series of those specific characters.
Yeah. And I think there's what a lot of people don't understand when it comes to like certain characters. Not every character that they're going to put out for any like campaign or any book they put out for their website, not all of it's going to end up popping off. You know, I just don't know where that comes from. Where like, if people know how comic book sales work, similar to what, you know, movie sales are. Certain movies don't appeal to a lot of people, so they don't sell as much. You know, we're definitely noticing that now. And people should know this now. Comic book shops do the ordering from distributors. And if there's not enough interest that a lot of people have with some characters, they're not going to get ordered. There's a reason why after issue one, there's less orders placed on issues 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, because, you know, you have to kind of gauge where the interest is at, you know?
Yeah, people picked up the first issue and they either enjoyed it and are going to continue, or mm-hmm. they just let it go. And it's same with, as you brought up in a good point, mm-hmm. it's the same with movies. It's mm-hmm. if the, let's say with the movies, if a movie was designed to have multiple mm-hmm. iterations of it, so sequels and stuff like that, if that first one doesn't take off, then your chances are that it's not going to hold mm-hmm. and resonate through the entire run. Yeah. Where we're kind of seeing a little bit of a difference, and one that actually seems to be doing fairly well, is the Dune series. And granted, it's not like a huge, massive moneymaker, but it's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
It's being overall consistent through the entire its run. So it's already on the second, and I believe there's one more movie. I believe it's going to be a trilogy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so with that in mind, they planned it, which, well, it seems like a lot of my Hollywood movies recently don't seem to kind of really plan their movie at all. They just kind of make it up as they go along.
Yeah. You know that from the Star Wars Disney trilogy, they didn't plan shit with that. That was
They're almost done shooting it, and they still haven't even finished the finale writing it. Oh, RIP Star Wars. I going to the Star Wars, I watched The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it for what it was, and it was typical J.J. Abrams in mm-hmm. his reboot. And with anything he reboots, he takes and recycles exactly what has happened in the past for the, and maybe dresses something up here, changes something a little bit different there. But you can tell through the through line through the movie, it's almost an exact copy. And you saw that with The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. A lot of the same points, and of course, one of the worst characters ever created, Mary Sue. I mean, she definitely was mm-hmm. Mary Sue through and through. But once I got done watching The Force Awakens, I was done. That was my end, and I never saw the Last Jedi, and I never saw the Rise of Skywalker.
You didn't need to.
Well, on top of that, what Disney Star Wars did, it changed it from the Skywalker saga. It's the mm-hmm. It's the Palpatine saga. Who's in the very first movie? Palpatine.
Mm-hmm.
He's there in Phantom Menace. He's there all the way through. Granted, he's not in the original Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
but he then shows up in Empire, granted just a hologram, and then disappears. But in the end, it's like, well, Rey is his granddaughter. So it's like, in the end, it's the Palpatine saga. It's not the Star Wars saga. And on top of that, the identity theft at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Rey Skywalker. I mean, no, you're Rey Palpatine. Granddaughter of the Dark Lord of the Sith. So I have a little bit of a controversial take when it comes to Anakin. In that, I think he actually did fulfill the prophecy.
Hmm.
The reason why, and some people may agree, some people may disagree on this, but the prophecy was the one would return balance to the force. Yin and yang. Hmm. If the Jedi have become so overpopulated and there's only two Sith, the balance is off.
Okay.
When Anakin becomes Darth, he then, now it's master and apprentice, and takes out all the Jedi, essentially leaving, except for the children, by and large, leaves Yoda a master, and right below him, not apprentice anymore, but then Obi-Wan Kenobi. Two Sith, two Jedi, there's your balance, you're yin and yang. So now, granted, I believe it was in Revenge of the Sith, where Yoda even brings up the point of potentially that the prophecy may have been misread.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my little controversial take. I think it might be a controversial take on Anakin, is that he did fulfill the prophecy. He brought balance to the Force, mm-hmm. of equal light and equal dark. Yang and yang.
There was something about Anakin's character that I realized over the many years. The character kind of always was a slave. So it kind of made sense that the character would end up being Darth Vader, slave to Palpatine. As a kid, he was a slave. He was always a slave to his emotions. You know, he ended up just becoming a slave as Darth Vader, a slave to basically, you know, the bad things that he did. I mean, Darth Vader is actually truly a great, complex character, actually.
Darth Vader, I think when it comes to the original six movies from mm-hmm. Anakin's transformation, even when he is doing the awful things, when he turns,
mm-hmm.
it's to protect his wife, to protect Padme
mm-hmm.
from the visions he was seeing of her death during childbirth.
Yeah.
And overall, I would say that Anakin / Vader actually is a really sympathetic character.
Mm-hmm.
When you really look at it, and if you just take it from the base level, just watching the movie, but mm-hmm. if you actually look a little bit more deeper into it, it's like, yeah, you brought up a really good point of that, is he's a slave to his emotion, his upbringing. And then because of his upbringing, it opens him up to being more susceptible mm-hmm. to manipulation. And that's exactly what Palpatine ends up feeding off of, because especially in Revenge of the Sith, Palpatine really preys on Anakin.
Mm-hmm. There's the other thing to bring up when it comes to Disney Star Wars is I don't really understand what is their actual end goal for this franchise, because everything leads up to basically, you know, The Force Awakens. Like, even in the comic books, like, everything kind of has to be in this, like, weird bubble before The Force Awakens, and they had all this continuity with the EU that they just basically didn't go with at all. Like, the shows are not particularly any good for the most part. Like, these shows drop, and it's just nothing but, obviously, hate, but, like, people just don't like this shit, really. The ratings are extremely bad on all these shows, too. I stopped watching after, I think it was Obi-Wan. I was like, yeah, this is not good. I'm not watching any more of these shows. I mean, Andor came out. People said they liked it, you know. But I was like, I'm done. Obi-Wan Kenobi being done the way that show did him was just so unbelievably bad. Boba Fett was just also the worst thing I've seen in a long time. Just straight, just bore fest, you know?
People tuned in and became fans of Star Wars based around the primary characters. When it came mm-hmm. to the original trilogy, that's Luke, Han, and Leia. Everyone mm-hmm. was showing up, and then the bad guy of Darth Vader, and then Palpatine, mm-hmm. well, the Emperor coming in at the last episode of the original trilogy. Then in the prequel, people were showing up because, hey, look, there's Obi-Wan again, and now he's training Anakin, and we see what led up to Darth turning to the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everyone was showing up for. I think the biggest mistake that Disney overall did is when Kathleen Kennedy essentially said, you know, all those books, those hundreds of books that have been written, all been stamped with approval by Lucasfilm. All those books had to be approved through Lucas to be able. So it was all continuity based. All of that actually was part of the mythos, the whole canon. And when Kathleen Kennedy came out and said, yeah, that's not canon. Yeah, all those books, the comic books and all that stuff. No, yep, that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to put it as legacy. So it's in existence, but it's not part of it's not canon.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best sequel trilogy they could have done was the Zahn books,
mm-hmm.
the Timothy Zahn books, and bringing in those three, because he wrote a really good series that I thought would be perfect for a sequel trilogy, because it now brings in Luke gets married. He has a kid. He's rebuilding the Jedi. Mm-hmm. And then you have, why am I blanking on the bad guy's name that they're trying to bring in now with Mandalorian?
Okay. Hell, I forgot his name, but
Admiral, he's an Admiral.
Admiral Thrawn?
Yeah, Admiral Thrawn. Admiral Thrawn was, I believe, and I may be mistaken, and other people out there that know the lore a lot better than I do, but I believe Thrawn was actually a creation of Zan.
Mm.
Because that was one of the major books that came out, and it was a trilogy book series on top of it. It's three books. But you see, and it follows Han, Luke, and Leia. And then bring in Luke's wife and their kids, and the fact that, like, even, and they don't have Han being an abandoned deadbeat dad. I mean, Han and Leia have three kids, two that are twins, and then one that's not. And so, I mean, there was a lot more potential that they could have did, but nope, Disney wanted to do their own thing, have their own stories, and now we see exactly what has happened with that.
And yeah, they wanted to do their own thing, and it was absolutely complete garbage, absolutely just straight up bad, you know? Not only just was it bad, it was just not interesting and bland as hell, like Finn, Poe, and what's the name? Finn, Poe, and Rey. Just the fact that they wasted Oscar Isaac. Like, people talk about Finn, but they don't talk about Finn in a good way. Finn is talked about for what they could have maybe have did with him based off an idea that kind of sounded kind of cool. Poe is just trash. Oscar Isaac's character is just actually useless. Nothing good about the character at all.
Well, you see, I mean, because I've watched plenty of the reviews of the other movies, but yeah, Finn was so wasted. You could clearly see what JJ was trying to really do with him. I almost think that I think JJ was going to reveal him as a Force user because, well, he was able to use a lightsaber. He was sensitive to things. I have a feeling that they were going to bring him in as more. I could have used him as another Force user. So you have a couple in there because, I mean, we see this with some of the games that are out there, is that there are a lot of Jedi that are in hiding that escaped Order 66. And so they're out in hiding still possible. Well, they got to start blending in. So they're having kids. The Jedi Force users are out there. And so Finn, I think, was breaking of a lot of it is the fact that, well, Finn was a stormtrooper. Mm-hmm. The whole point that we see from the prequels, what were stormtroopers? They're clones. The stormtroopers are clones. They're not anything other than that because they're supposed to be completely, utterly brainwashed to do and support whatever is told to them. So I think that is a little bit breaking by making a non-clone stormtrooper. There's a book series that follows young Han Solo. And if my memory is correct, in that story, Han actually was in line to actually become an officer in the Imperial Army, the Imperial Navy. And ends up breaking away from that and then becomes a smuggler and whatnot.
It's just weird, the fact that we see Han after all these many years. If you were watching those movies as they were coming out in theaters, the last time you saw Han, they had, you know, obviously defeated Emperor Palpatine. They had restored peace to the galaxy. The next time you see him, he's the same deadbeat dad. And you're just like, what the fuck?
What the hell? There was no character growth at all from the end of Return of the Jedi to The Force Awakens. Instead, it was a complete backtrack to him being back to being a rogue all by himself out there, abandoning his wife and kid. I mean, it's on par with what Disney's done to all strong male characters. Look what they did to Indiana Jones. They did the exact same thing to Indiana Jones, made him a absent father. Granted, his son died in Vietnam the way they did it that way. But he left his wife. He's on the verge of divorce. He's a drunk. I mean, they did a complete just destruction of the character.
Just for no reason whatsoever. Like, if people got to factor in, the reason why these movies weren't received very well is because half the stuff you had originally saw, because, well, let's be honest with you, most people weren't going to read books. There was a good amount that probably did read books, but, like, as far as, like, a good amount of people saw the movies, the originals, prequels, or prequels, originals, and they didn't really care for Star Wars until it came back from what Disney was doing. They see that Force Awakens movie, and they're just in general like, what the actual fuck is this? You know? And then the movie, The Force Awakens, does no good job of explaining how the fuck we got from basically, you know, Luke defeating Palpatine to this point. They have that wall of text they always have in every movie, and it's like, all it says basically is like, a new freaking Republic was built and all sorts. What the fuck? How? Like, there was no good way they tied in what had already happened to what this new trilogy was doing. So you're already starting off on a bad foot, you know?
In addition to that, though, look at the new Republic that came in and took over after the destruction of the Empire. So you have the new Republic. So why in The Force Awakens does the new Republic seem to have a fighting force that's still in line with the rebellion? Where did this new evil force be able to build up such a massive army when the ones that are the power is the new Republic and the Empire was pretty much destroyed except for the outskirts type stuff? So you would think there would be a swapping where the remnants of the Empire would be more like the Rebel Alliance against the Empire compared. But no, you walk in and all of a sudden you have this massive fleet, a massive army building the Star Killer base. I mean, it makes no sense. There's nothing connecting it. There's no way to really even explain it. There's so many plot holes. But don't worry, raise the key to everything.
Because I want to ask you, your favorite superhero character is Green Arrow. Where does that come from? Did you read Green Arrow comics growing up, actually?
Yeah. I took, when it came to like Longbow Hunter, I really kind of started getting into Green Arrow specifically, unfortunately, because he's become what he's become, is that I was a fan of Kevin Smith. I loved his View Askewverse. I Clerks, Mallrats, and whatnot. And then unfortunately, he turned the way he did after his massive heart attack. I mean, he got healthy, good for him, but unfortunately, he got sucked right into everything that is Hollywood, and he has become what he's become. But he did writings, and I visited his comic book store in Red Bank, New Jersey. And then he did the I believe it was Longbow Hunter. I don't have the books anymore. But he wrote some issues of Green Arrow, and that's when I got into Green Arrow. And then I love what they did with the reboot in first year, which is what was the foundation for the CW show of Arrow. And I think Arrow itself was great in the first couple seasons, and we kind of went off the rail with the introduction of Felicity Smote, because it kind of made Oliver always just kind of following her, and I think that's where it really went off the rails, because Green Arrow is not supposed to be whiny. Green Arrow is they really did alter who Green Arrow is later in the live action series. So I mean, out of all of those, out of all of the comic book heroes, it's just Green Arrow. And on top of that, granted, he's almost cut from the same, very similar rug as Bruce Wayne.
He's
another rich playboy.
God, another rich white guy. God damn it.
But because of that money, and because of the money, he's able to get this. But the one thing that I enjoy also is the fact that he is using arrows. the fact that he's using something that is so low key, so archaic as a weapon compared to all this other stuff. Now, Batman's got the cool toys. Never can forget that Batman line from the 89 movie. Where does he get those wonderful toys from the Joker, Jack Nicholson? And while that's true, it's just something about the fact that anyone can pick up a bow and arrow. Anyone can learn to shoot an arrow. And more textile, more being able to, compared to something, go and find something that's on Batman's utility belt and be able to find that in the store. You can go to any sporting goods place and you can get a pretty basic arrow and bow set. So you can do that and people can pick it up. And it's the tactileness of it. It's the fact that we're looking at something that has been in existence for for hundreds of years. And so enjoyable.
Yeah, for me, what I think the CW show really did for Arrow that was bad was that they made him kind of like Batman, and just his personality is not like his. I know you've read Green Arrow comics. You know that's not Oliver's personality. Oliver is not like Bruce. There's specific reasons why they're not. There's the reason why the Justice League forms as a unit is because they all have distinctly different personalities that mesh very well. Oliver is not like Bruce. That was just the horror. That was just the worst thing they could have did for him. But this is a time period where, you know, DC was doing basically Batman's tone for every character, you know, except for like a few of them, you know, and they wanted a Batman show, but Batman wanted, the producers were like, no, Batman doesn't get to be on TV. And it's like, then why they ever have Gotham? It's just so fucking crazy, you know? And then now people think like Arrow's a serious character. And it's like, well, yeah, I imagine some runs of the character, I haven't got a chance to all consume everything, obviously. I imagine there's some serious runs based on any character, but we know that's not Oliver's personality.
Like, not at all.
Some people have said, well, that won't work on TV. It's like, what are you talking about, won't work on TV? You mean comedy? Like, general, good, well-written, comedic comedy won't work? What are you talking about? So a character should just, like, completely not be who the character is because people won't respond to comedy well? It's like, huh? That's stupid, actually.
Well, you look at it, too, and the only way to properly do Green Arrow and some of the comics that, especially later comics, you would have to do an R version. Green Arrow can be very violent, and then it's got its good parts and stuff like that where it's not as, but Oliver can be a smartass. And then on top of that, you look at the one thing that I think the CW kind of really messed up was Laura Lance, because
messed up on her character. Holy,
they really messed it up, because that's supposed to be all. I mean, Green Arrow's what? I mean, and they get married, but the whole point that his love interest is Laura Lance.
Yeah,
Black Canary. The whole point that's comic book accurate, and then to bring in Felicity Smote, and then. You see that little bit because, well, Oliver in the show hooks up with Laurel's little sister and stuff like that. And I mean, that was, because they were trying to make Oliver too much like in his younger days, too reckless, too much of a playboy.
Yeah.
Again, still kind of shifting it more towards carefree. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Persona when he was younger. So
it was one of those things where I think the episode that really turned the entire show was the Ra's al Ghul season, I think season 3, when he like stabbed Oliver and kicked him off the ledge. I feel like that's when I stopped caring about the show for some reason. I was like, and it came back after its break, and I was like, this just ain't the same show anymore, you know? I always liked The Flash more. I thought The Flash show was just a little bit more better, but I can see why people liked Arrow. It had some good things about it, and I think that tone, that personality can work, but you know the long-term damage it has on a character, though, when you're like, this is not who the character really should be, you know?
Arrowverse on CW had so much potential.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It really did. Especially, and the introduction of the other characters, I think, was well done. I did love the episode when they brought Barry in for the very first time, because they introduced the Flash through an episode of the Arrow where he just shows up randomly because he saw something that was similar and is, well, a crime scene investigator. And so he just shows up, and then later find out it's like, Aaron, you weren't even approved to even show up here. What are you doing? But leading into the Flash. And overall, I would say the Flash was a very good show as well. And it had actually a longer run in the end, episodes wise, but I think it held a little more closer true to the comic book character longer through the series compared to Arrow.
I remember when they had like Crisis on Infinite Earths and stuff like that, and I was like, there was so much good they did. Like, all the good they did was also balanced by how much bad they did too. The fact that they had better connective continuity than an actual movie universe is saying completely something. You know, there was really good stuff there. It just started going off the deep end with like all these other like random gay characters later on in all these other seasons. I think like Stargirl started out really good for season one, despite a little bit of changes that I wasn't really a huge fan of. But then season two just got really boring and really just meh, honestly. It wasn't bad. It just got really boring. Superman and Lois I thought was actually pretty good. But I got to watch season three. I didn't watch season three yet. I know I watched the first two seasons, actually. Something these shows do is just, they start strong, but something in them just makes you not watch them later on.
Well, there's one of the Arrowverse that I refuse to watch, and good on those that watched it to review it, and that is Batwoman.
Oh god, yeah.
I have not seen a single episode, and I have absolutely no interest of seeing any of the episodes. They just destroyed that character because they were going purely for identity politics completely. The thing that really turned me off right from the get-go was from the sneak preview where Kane is sitting there in front of the bat suit, and the guy's like, oh, that suit is absolute perfection. And her response is, it will be when it fits a woman.
I'm like,
I'm done. Nope. I'm not even going to even give this. I'm not even going to give this a go.
Oh God. Do you remember the trailer for Batwoman? It was like, I'm a woman, hear me roar. Remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't remember who it is that uses that. I am woman.
Yeah. Oh, God. That was so cringe. I almost died watching that inside. I think that's the most disliked superhero trailer of all time, outside of like some new Marvel movies, which is saying something.
Well, you want to know what? I almost think in most cases, it seems like the competition right now between DC and Marvel is a race to the bottom. Who can get to the bottom first? Oh, we think we've hit the bottom. Oh, no. We've got Ms. Marvel. Mm-hmm. Oh, you think that's the bottom? We got Madam Web. So, it's pretty bad. I don't even know why they thought Eternals was going to be some kind of huge success.
I don't get it.
I don't either. I
don't get it. If Eternals wasn't even liked or cared for when they were made as comic characters, like I also haven't read their stuff at all, but if you go to like history videos, they weren't liked or cared for at all. Why? The only reason why they did it, let's be honest, they did it. They thought they were going to have another Guardians on their handle, unknown characters, no one cared for, no one really knew. Random director, no one probably knew. They thought lightning could strike twice, same thing with Guardians, and they realized, yeah, it's not how that works. You actually need to make a good movie for that to actually even be applicable. You know, you can take characters no one knows and make them household names, you could, but it's not going to happen all the time, and it's not something that can happen consistently because you can't bank on someone making a good movie like that to hit with the general audience that hard consistently. And a lot of people just always use the Guardians example. It's like, you know, that's an anecdotal piece of evidence, right? That can't always happen, though. There's a reason why people kind of just gravitate towards characters that are already with name value attached to them. You know, that's just how it's going to work. And again, there's going to be bad movies attached to those characters too, but at least that guarantees you money, you know? something you that they have to get back to.
Well, you got to look at it too. Even with the team up movies, DC really screwed up when they were trying to really get to the team movie really quickly. Where when with Marvel, phase one was essentially introducing some random characters, ones that maybe were not overall huge names. Example, Iron Man. Iron Man was not was a popular character, but not a huge character like other Marvel characters. But they grew him, and then they brought Captain America and grew him and the Hulk. And you grow these outside of each other, then you can bring them together for an Avengers movie. They've got to be able to stand on their own feet. And it seems like even modern Marvel with what they're doing right now is they'll take a couple obscure TV shows, a highly unliked movie hero, and throw them together in a movie and think it's going to be successful. It's not going to work because, A, how many people actually know who Agatha was? How many people even watched Ms. Marvel? And even knew what those characters were, and then they have a bad taste in their mouth when it came to Captain Marvel.
Yep. It's one of those things where, you know, a lot of these characters that they're pushing out, and this is the take with the media that I did agree with, because there's a common sentiment amongst like a lot of them, if you read their articles, where it's like a lot of these movies aren't performing very well because the audience doesn't know the characters. And it's like, no shit. If people don't know who those fuck those, there's what you just said there. There's obscure, and then there's really obscure. It's like you got to stop doing movies based around really obscure characters like that. Like somehow, what the MCU did became like people thought that they could just do it constantly. And it's like no, you can't. You need a big name character to sell the movie. Then you could, you know, add in those other obscure characters to that team. You know, who's gonna go really watch a movie based around Madame Web? People don't know who the part. I would imagine not knowing people who the fuck that really is, unless you're like obviously in the know, you know, like Black Adam's the same way. People kind of decently, I would think, know who Black Adam is, as he's just Shazam's main villain, but do they really know Black Adam like that? It's just no, you know, that they need to stop making movies based around really random characters. That's why they haven't been making any money. Like I think you would make decent money if you just put a character on screen that people were somewhat familiar with. Now, the actual writing has to be good too, because, you know, word of mouth carries weight on that too. You know, if word of mouth is bad in the movie, then it's just gonna fucking fail. Like, they're making movies based on the Marvels, and it's like, you said before, Ms. Marvel, lowest rated Disney Plus show. People didn't even watch it. They don't know who the fuck that is. They're like, who the fuck is this random bitch?
And on top of it, it was really, I mean, the comic book character itself from the actual books, It was not really a popular, it was a very small group of fans around it. So, I mean, extremely small. And then to bring it forward, it doesn't work. And they really did blow it, I think, with that one. Oh, and then going back to the Eternals, I think if the Eternals had been introduced properly, sticking more to who they were in the books, and was released around phase one, phase two, I think they could have potentially pulled another Guardians of the Galaxy. But when everyone had already tuned out of what Marvel was doing, they've already killed off all of these main characters with Endgame. That's where the drop off really happened was, well, you killed off all of these popular characters. You're not going to bring back any of them. Well, now people have tuned out. They're done. And while the media keeps liking to say superhero fatigue, no, it's bad writing fatigue. And on top of that, it's just the audience has overall tastes have changed. They're not looking for these comic book movies anymore. Now you have those that still love comic book movies, and unfortunately what's coming out now is all agenda driven, and now no one's tuning into it because now it's just apathy towards the entire all of the properties, and those that have used that were making it $1 billion movies, well, they've moved on to other things.
Yeah,
And that seems to be video game mm-hmm. movies are going to be, I think, are going to be the next Marvel thing.
Because we saw anime live action too. Yeah.
Anime live
which I hate. I hate the idea of that stuff so bad, honestly.
Anime shouldn't be live action at all. Anime needs to stay where it is and where it's successful. Mm-hmm. And because for one thing, the West is never going to do anime live action correct in any kind of way, unless the creator of the anime is completely involved and has say on everything. Where I didn't watch it because I'm not a huge anime fan, but like One Piece, mm-hmm. he was involved in it, and a lot of people were really enjoying it and saying how good it was, and that's mm-hmm. because the creator was so involved in it compared to other live action animes that were made with no input from the creator, and they were hot garbage. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the other thing I wanted to ask you before we head out in a little bit here, which is, how did you ever start watching FNT and Geeks and Gamers, Critical Drinker, and Air July?
Well, the gateway, if you will, was Doomcock originally, and his videos, and then seeing him doing a live stream with Gary, and then I started watching Gary on his reactions towards the end of the run of Game of Thrones. And then I just gravitated towards Game of Thrones. I mean, because of his Game of Thrones. And then I'm also a very big Star Trek fan, more than Star Wars, actually. And another great franchise, RIP. Then from there, it was getting the recommendations for Geeks and Gamers, the recommendations for Heel versus Babyface. And I just started watching all the videos and then finding essentially the Fellowship, and then just being part of the Fellowship and the great people. It's not just about the host in any kind of way. I mean, as you know, from the meetups, the amount of people that show up to these meetups, well, a lot of them, yeah, they want to say hi to Gary and Jeremy and Ryan and Quarterblack. The biggest thing about it is the amount of conversations that are happening with everyone, with each other, that are usually the ones that are in the chat that are talking to each other. And that, I think, is the biggest thing that I notice even from the meetups, is the fact of the Fellowship getting together, seeing each other face to face, and just having conversations of how was your trip in to topics of a movie or a favorite property. Or in your case, or in the case like you and I, we were there with Iron Oxide, and we were going over to that retro game place, and we found some back issues of comics, and we started looking through.
Yeah, Iron left me like my dad, and I was like, okay, I guess. Oh shit!
No abandonment issues at all there.
Here's like, I'm gonna leave my black son alone with a Mexican. And I'm like, okay, it's good. That's how that works.
Oh shit.
But
yeah.
No, the meetup was great. It was super fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, I can't wait to go again next year. The reason why I kind of want to make it a yearly thing is because there's a lot of investment doing that, you know? It's just a lot. Yeah.
In the past, let's see, that was actually my third year going to it. This is actually their fourth annual. This was the third one that I was able to attend. And just looking at it going, well, there's some people that are staying around a lot longer through it and doing other events. I mean, I missed out on Ryan Karaoke. I mean, come on.
No one told us they were doing karaoke. I would have did it. I would have done karaoke if they told me. You know,
hey,
problem is, you know what's going to happen next year, dude? That's the problem, is everyone was kind of doing their own thing, which is fine. Everyone has their own groups. That's fine. We got to make our own group when we go out there and do our own thing. And then when the meetup happens, go to the actual meetup. You know what I mean?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, right. And that's where I was looking at it from, making it a longer event and then getting connected mm-hmm. up with all of us.
Yeah.
You, Iron Oxide, Selena, getting mm-hmm. all of us together and us go and have our own adventures, going to the comic book store, going and karaokeing as a group, going and doing those things and mm-hmm. and having it and enjoying it and enjoying that aspect of it. The meetup itself and going to that event, yes, that's part of the fellowship there. And then yeah. our minor fellowship within the fellowship going, we do our own adventures.
Yeah.
We go and have our own activities. We go and find mm-hmm. other things around the Vegas area to do, explore, live stream, and talk about.
Because the issue that I had with the meetup, not that everything was really bad, it's because, you know, it was just super uncoordinated with what people really wanted to do. You know, because everyone kind of just was saying things at the last minute, and it's kind of hard to get there. And then there was a lot of downtime at some of these things where they weren't kind of speeding them up. No one did anything bad. It's just, you know, next time I'll be a little bit more better coordinated, actually, you know, going to make sure I have a group of people to do things with, just in case I'm not in, because I'm not invited to like everyone's thing. You know, I told you before at the meetup, I'm not one of those guys to kind of like intrude on an already established group. You know, yep. It's just, that's something that I've learned throughout life. I'm not the guy, kind of guy to be like, oh, I'm going to be kind of coming into this new group. It's like, no, I'll just go make my own group. So I can just do that, you know?
Right. I met Iron Oxide and Selena, the meetup I went to, the second annual one. And okay. So I've roughly, air quotes, known them in the sense that mm-hmm. I've talked with them for about the last 2 years or so. Mm-hmm. And so every year, always connecting right back up with them at the meetups. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those, it's just like, yeah, you're going to create a group within the group. And then yeah. you start. And yeah, I agree. I'm not a person that's going to sit there and really intrude. It's kind of that, hey, why don't you join us?
Yeah.
Type of
yeah.
thing. That mm-hmm. that invite, because it's yeah, otherwise you're just kind of walking in and going, you're kind of I'm here. Yeah. So you're going to have to accept me. And yeah, I'm going to, where are we going next? Oh, we're going to IHOP for pancakes because it's now 3 a.m. I mean, no, we're not going to do that. I mean, it's the invite aspect of it. It's just.
Yeah, because, you know, it's kind of left to be like an open invite. But most of the things are like done when like people are like texting their friends to come hang out and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, I fully get it. You know, you have group things to do with. But at that point, then I just have my own group and we just go do stuff then. You know, I'm not trying to like be that guy where I have to want people to invite me there. I'll just go do my own thing. And if someone does happen to okay. invite us when they're hanging out, that's fine. I don't mind hanging out with them, but I don't want to like have to be the whole aspect of like potentially hoping to get invited. It's like, I don't want to be that way. You know?
I don't want to be that way either. And it was the first night I was there plenty of time for the Film Threat event. And mm-hmm. I didn't know if it was an RSVP thing or I could just show up. Gary later told me, he's like, it's always better to ask for forgiveness. In other words, he was saying you should have just shown up and you would have been fine. But I was messaging people trying to get a response going, hey, can I just show up? I know I'm not. I got in early. I have nothing to do right now. I know that right. this is mm-hmm. this event's going on.
Yeah.
But.
Besides also, the RSVP thing, now that we know, it didn't really matter, honestly. Most of us came outside. Most of the time, basically, who doesn't know, after you RSVP and get in and they check your ID, the RSVP thing didn't really matter past like 40 minutes when it starts anyway. Maybe, you know? Everyone usually comes outside. Everyone's going in and out of the bar anyway. I honestly don't really understand what was the meaning of RSVPing anyway, you know?
From previous, the year previous, it was just, they had opened it up and it was only one this year because they had two different and they two different events and they RSVP'd the way they did. The event was a little bit more contained in the sense it was a little bit smaller of a group. It wasn't as jam packed. And I mean, we had other people that showed up writing, Raven Rider, I believe is her name, and Masters of TDS.
They showed up. Yeah, I saw them.
They did. Yeah. I mean, as soon as they walked up, it said, oh, hey, welcome back, because they were there last year. And they didn't get into the RSVP. Well, where did they spend the entire time? Well, they went in and got a drink and stuff like that, but for the most part outside, because the weather is nice, that a lot of people just hung out outside to talk. Because, well, it's getting really crowded in the room where everyone is that they want to talk to Jeremy and comics, Culture Casino and Gary. So a lot of people just stay outside and enjoy the conversation. And that's what I'm saying. That's what's great about the meetups is just everyone just, we all have a common interest in good entertainment, good fantasy, good comics.
Yeah, and it was great to just talk to people and just see people face to face and get to know people. And, you know, next time for sure, because it's my very first meetup, I didn't know how the coordination would go. Just I know better next time. Have obviously before the meetup goes, you know, talk to the people, get a group of people and just kind of hang out and then just go to the meetups when they happen at 7 PST, actually. That's just way better. Make sure you save a little bit more money the next time. I didn't save enough money, actually.
Well, I randomly sat down at one of the slot machines, $3 bet, and I won $175.
You're insane. Oh, my God. Fucking hell. I should have gambled. I was feeling lucky that week. I'd get my rent money.
I would say that one of the best ways going forward too with these meetups and stuff like that is you get that group together that we all know that we're going to be there, communicate and kind of lay out not necessarily a firm plan of what's going to happen, but kind of lay out just kind of little points. We want to do a comic book run to a comic book store, let's say this day. And then, okay, we'll fit it in to go and do a comic book. Hey, there's this place that's nothing but old arcade games. We'll go one day and go to that place. Just little minor things that aren't necessarily set in stone, but kind of get a little bit of framework.
That was my thing. There's too much downtime that ended up happening between things. We could have got way more things done.
I agree completely.
At least we'll know better next time. And as someone who doesn't know, Junkin Emerald Errol will be on the panel shows very soon. I think you said you're going to be on about tomorrow. I think you said Tuesdays or which day you said you're going to be on again?
I'm usually free most of the time, depending on what my schedule looks like. So I'm just going to be that random person that's going to be able to jump on randomly. I mean, it really does jump down to what my work schedule is.
Okay.
Because I've been working up like almost, I would say, about 70 hours a week right now.
That's fucking crazy.
Well, that's the great thing of moving up in the company and having so much responsibility and everything, and this being the system expert for my company for our management and management and scheduling software. So I'm doing a lot of editing and changing of our systems. So it's just eating up a lot of time. But the nice thing is that it's starting to ramp down, where all of my hard work over the last 3-4 months now has really started to pay off, that now my hours are actually starting to decrease, where I'm now able to get everything done in a normal 40-hour work week. Sucks for the paycheck because now it's not nearly as large, but it's getting my free time back, which I haven't had in quite some time. The meetup in Las Vegas really was my first actual appreciable time off in over a year.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'm working almost all weekend long and almost all weekend long.
It was great having a vacation, man.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially to get away. Awesome. Especially to get away from wherever you live and be able to then go meet new people, meet those that you've already connected with, go and see different areas, do different things. And that's why I drive. I don't, not that I'm opposed to flying. If it's a really long distance, I'll fly, but I grew up doing road trips, and with doing road trips growing up means I love to be on the road, be able just to go, hey, you want to know what? That looks really interesting. Pull off to the side of the road, take a picture of it, or go and explore it. Oh my goodness. I'm 10 miles away from the biggest ball of mud. I'm going to go see that type stuff. It's just, you can see a lot more and make it more of an exciting trip. So,
all right. And the last few things I'll ask you is the first thing, which is, got any big plans for yourself coming up this year, 2024?
Get more into, I'm not looking overall to really start my own channel, but happy to be jumping on and supporting other people on their channels and being a panelist. And that's what my plan really is through the rest of this year is to enjoy communicating and talking with other people on panels and stuff like that. And maybe in the future, a channel may develop and videos will come. But at this point, it's just I'm happy with just talking my piece with other people.
Hell yeah, man. And the last thing I'll ask you, is there any shout outs you want to give to anyone in particular? Anything else you want to say before we head out?
No. Anyone that's interested, they can find me on X at Gala X Media, which you can see at the with my name. It's Drunken Emerald Arrow, parentheses, Galaxy Express Media.
Awesome. So can't wait to see you and have you on other panel shows coming up. Thank you guys for watching this episode of the Iron Man Podcast, and hopefully you guys, at the time of this episode being done, have a great weekend. See you guys later.